Pentru-ți mărți în pereche. Să te feri, omul de
pomul. Păi, să-mi dau helicopter și
gol. Păi, să-mi dau helicopter și gol.
No, no, that's where it is geographically, based on the cheshbon of where the sun was when it was hung on the fourth day of creation, when it became then the Gan Eden is in Pakistan.
And we have that knowledge.
What? Afghanistan, maybe. Who's Pakistan, Afghanistan. Anyway, there were one of the stands. Yeah. Years and years ago. I actually read, there's an article I read in the New York Times, I wish I had saved it, but I didn't, about a valley which is very difficult to get into, which exists in this area, which is called the Garden of Eden, because if you get in there, there are lush areas with amazing amounts of flora and fauna. So, you know, is that Gan Eden? Probably not, but it could be a place like that. It may well be that there is such a place. Now, was Slifkin who wrote the book?
No, David Brown. David Brown.
Okay, so what he's saying that it was swallowed up, it may well be, but then again, it may just be that we don't know how to access it, right? No. So it could be that the Shulman lady went in there with his body, and that his body remained there, and his soul then went up to Gan Eden on high. It could be listen, there's got to be a closet somewhere where Eliyahu Navi keeps his body, right? So what? Where is this? So what if he's an angel? When he comes down, he takes a human form. If Eliyahu Navi came down today, could he make? And we had 9 people. Could he make a minion?
Yeah,
sure. So as minion would be human.
Malcolm could complete a minion.
We're taking a break. This is the famous Jewish wrestler Rachel Halpern. So here is a picture of Rachel Halpern with the Chazon Ish. Here is him as Yeshiva Bacher learning in Hebron, and here's a picture of him with the Chazon Ish. This is a better picture of the Chazon Ish. Over here with his father. Okay, so he was close to the Chazon Ish. Then he became the yeshiva from Hebron. Here is in the yeshiva, learning and starting to.
Wow.
Here he is.
Wrestling.
Wow. Amsterdam. Prague. Also Prague.
Florida. Have you showed this to Rabbi Schiller?
Yeah, he wanted to borrow a book. I told him I had to bring it to North America.
That's the priest-terran area.
America.
The priest-terran area. You can tell what I think.
Yeah. So I asked him, Rabbi Schiller, in the 50s when he was fighting, this is from 49, so in the 50s when he was wrestling already then fake? And he said that wrestling already back then was fake.
Wow.
But in the book, he treats it like it's totally serious.
Mm-hmm.
And he said that these guys were sworn back then never to reveal that it was all fake. So therefore, when they wrote the autobiographies, they always pretended that it was real. So
you mean it all was pre-arranged,
who is this?
He was an Israeli from wrestling champion.
This is
now here he is happening before the match.
In that outfit.
That's all over his head.
Rest was rabbi.
From now?
Right.
No, he's just from
begin with.
Who is the rabbi?
Oh my god, I cannot believe it.
We have to video these from now on.
You're the one that's listening.
Oh my god.
Then he came back to Israel. He opened a restaurant, a fast food restaurant.
What was your restaurant?
Yeah.
He had a tough time with his shirt off. There's something fundamental.
And then in the Yom Kippur War, he went to perform in front of the soldiers. See this Yom kind of test?
There's a small yarmulke over there. And a bunch of pictures like that. And then a picture of the karate. And Persia. This is fighting in Persia.
Is this still in print? To try to sell us the trivia.
Now here we're beginning to, I think, come back.
The rabbi, he was wrestling.
Yeah. Wrestling rabbi.
Wrestling. Title bomb. What?
You have the wrapping grab.
Who is he?
What is he on this picture?
This picture is... he's showing his safer. This is him, in this book. See? This is after he came back. This is him. This is a former wrestler. This guy.
So
the same guy who's in the pictures over here is also
can
over here.
Can you go to the Wrestling Rabbi page one more time? I would
like to
see this.
Wrestling
Rabbi.
Go to Rabbi. This is the turning point. In Bnei Brak in 1974, he went back to learning.
Go to the Wrestling Rabbi.
No.
You know, it was Yaakov in the Moloch. It hit him.
Show him
hard.
The whole loop shot, right?
Yeah.
He's got the mug and something on his shirt.
The rest.
The Davini before
the
match.
It's in Davini?
Yeah. The last one.
Spelled wrestling with an R, not a W.
So the wrestling rabbi is a rough customer in the ring. Outside of it, that's another story.
Wow.
Wrestle those cautions.
With a choke hold.
I'm just imagine
Rabbi Rakowski in a body holding picture.
I mean, are we talking about he was a student of Chazanish?
Yeah.
Was like one of the many students? Like
no, he had a close personal connection to Chazanish. He was a picture of the Chazanish.
Wow.
Yeah.
Maybe
it
wasn't
Chazanish.
One of the
Portland,
but is everyone else?
What?
Maybe
it
was one of the wrestling. One of the Shalas of where he came.
Right?
No. Maybe he just
no, you're not
place
to place
to life.
No, I read the book. His family was very close to Chazanish.
The legacy of the rabbi. Yeah.
Yes.
Now we're talking about where the location of Gan Eden is. When we say Mount Ararat, are we sure which one it is? You know it's the one in
No.
Sure.
We're not sure of anything.
Sure.
We have good
suspicion.
We have not good.
Yeah.
Or that same one that's in, what is it, Armenia?
Yeah, it could be. I don't know.
We gotta get videos.
Yes. Ararat, by the way, is a mountain range. Even though there's one Mount Ararat, there's also a mountain range called Ararat.
Oh,
there's actually a photograph. There is some piece on the huge.
There are a bunch of
mountains
called Ararat.
Yeah,
but photographs in time of like 1940
something. Right, but some of them are doctored up.
Dad,
not so simple.
Dad,
yeah.
There are a few mountain ranges called Ararat and a few. Yes, by the mountains.
So the thing is, there is an interesting movie on this topic on the web. You can get it on YouTube, I think. Like some Christian missionaries made a movie on it. And they believe that they found it. It's worth watching.
Ladies and gentlemen,
I care where
Luke found it.
What?
Which one?
But
there is a physical
manifestation
of the heaven on
Earth.
No, not
it's
called
North Dakota.
No, no, no.
That's the
Harris Desert.
Come on,
okay, so listen. Okay, listen. This is from Rav Dessler. He said, this is frightening and there's a tremendous mussar. You got to know that Gehenna does not fix a person up at all. It doesn't teach him good. The Gehenna just destroys evil. And as long as a person still has a little bit of evil, it has to be destroyed. And he still, there is, and he says, there's a world of lies and a world of truth. People think after right after they die, they automatically enter the world of truth. This is not true. This is a mistaken impression. Rather, since a person, when we live in the world of lies, which is our beautiful world, then that means that the lies are within us. we internalize what goes on in the world. So that, and all of the world we see from the perspective of the great lies which we live. In the world of truth, it's supposed to be the opposite. The evil is the world of lies, and that doesn't exist in the world of truth. Now, as long as a nefesh, a soul, has evil in it, or bad in it, which requires the Gehenna to destroy it, that soul is still in the world of Sheker. Meaning, after you die, you don't necessarily go to the world of truth, the Olam HaEmes, because you don't necessarily you're not completely free of the lies of this world, and therefore you can't get to the world of truth right away. And he says in Gehenna, it doesn't teach you truth. It just gradually gets rid of the evil. He says that he brings down this Gemara. The Gemara, for those who just walked in, which says that Rabbi Bachana heard the people who were swallowed up in time of Korach in Gehenna, and they were shouting, "Moshe is true and his Torah is true, and we're liars." And this is an astonishing thing, says Odessa. If they already know that Moshe is true, why does the thing happen? Right? They already learned their lesson. So the answer which is given is that the statement is not from the depths of his heart, because with the impressions, the internal impressions a person took from this world, that remains in him forever. Forever is a long time. I don't know if I would say that. But he says that there is the inner heart and the outer heart. And even if you feel something, but it's only your outer heart, that's still the world of lies. Because the outer side is different than the inside. Just like a person could be pious on the outside and wicked on the inside, so too, even in your heart, internally, you can think you're pious and that you know what's right, but your internal heart is a very dark and nasty place. And that means that you're living in lies. Because you're not even in touch with your own self, much less in touch with the truth. So, when a person admits something in Gehenna, it's only superficial. What's the proof? He's still in Gehenna. If all the evil had been eradicated from him, he wouldn't be in Gehenna anymore. So therefore, it continues to exist. That's why we learned, I don't know when we mentioned, but a while ago, that, you know, it says, Martin Gittin says that when they went to Titus, you know, I don't know if I ever got your name. What's your name?
I don't know.
Abba, we might want to see the pictures in the back here. We already looked at them.
Oh, the wrestling guy?
The wrestling guy.
Oh, you got
them. Ian liked it very much. So the,
okay, thanks for being with me. Oh, wow.
Anyway, it says, Martin says that when Unkus wanted to convert, so first he brought up Bilam, and then he brought up Titus, and finally brought up Jesus last, right? So Bilam and Titus gave terrible punishments. Anybody remember that? Right? Yeah. This guy's getting boiled in excrement, this getting boiled, various different things, right? So in any event, so Bilam and Titus both said, don't be good to the Jews. Be bad to the Jews. That'll be good for you. So there they are, suffering away in the world, in wherever they're getting their punishments, and they still remain with the evil inside of them. That remains there, even though they see the truth. But that evil aspect of or wicked aspect of a person, it's not something which is intellectual, it's something which is embedded deeply in and emotionally. So therefore, that's got to be eradicated, and even though you know intellectually in Gehenna what the truth is, even your outer heart knows what the truth is. That's not enough. That's why it says an amazing thing. It says, you know, every Shabbos they take the Rishoyim in Gan Eden, they turn off the fires. You know that? Mm-hmm. They turn off the fires.
Yeah.
And the Rishoyim, what?
You said Rishoyim in Gehenna?
Yeah. Well, they turn off the fires in Gehenna, and they on Shabbos they don't burn. Right? So people have the misconception that there's no time in Gan Eden and Gehenna. That's an incorrect perception. But there is time. Of course there's time. So on Shabbos, they turn off the fires, which means, obviously, the shame and embarrassment and degradation of Gehenna is offset
by their being they're going through Shabbos.
They bring an early Shabbos
and hold their hotel. So it says, I don't know how to explain the metaphor, but it says they take them to the mountains of snow to cool off on Shabbos, and as Shabbos is ending, they try and steal some snow from the mountain to take back with them to Gehenna. So, you know, here you are. You know you're suffering because you stole in this world, right? Or you did whatever rotten thing you did in this world. But you still remain with the intent to steal over there. Even though you know it's wrong, even though you're not going to get zapped, you even still have, to that extent, that it's limited, of course, but you still have free will. You can still decide, you can still follow your emotions. And I don't know if it's free will. I should take that back. You can still follow your negative side. And you can still be impelled, pushed towards stealing stuff in Gan Eden.
How do they consider stealing?
They're not supposed to take it. That's what it says. What can I tell you? Those are the rules. Okay? I don't know where the rules are posted.
What paper is this?
Rav Dessler, with somebody else. Try for truth. Okay? It's in the English. The third volume of the English. So, what happens is that you can have people like the it seems the congregation of Korach. The time Rabbah Bar Bar Chana came along, it was over 1,000 years since the time of Korach, right? And they were still down there. And what are they doing down there? They were obviously they were emotionally, you know, but these were the really wicked guys, Korach, Dothan, and Aviram. They were still emotionally in that place, where they were rebellious against Hashem's authority as expressed by Moshe Rabbeinu. So that didn't go away yet, and they're still suffering. Now it says that they go, every 30 days they come up to the same spot, right? That means they're boiling around here, there, everywhere during those 30 days. Not necessarily here. So I assume what that means is that they are tormented. They're tormented by their inner soul, and this inner soul, which is still wicked, doesn't give them any rest. So they're constantly going back and forth from place to place, trying to find what exactly will fix them or what they should be doing, and it doesn't work. I don't know if that's the pshat, but I think that could be the pshat. The Ritva says here in the Hakosev, he says a very strange thing. He says at the end of every 30 days they're put down in Gehenna. In other words, it sounds like for 29 of 30 days they can be in Gan Eden. But on the 30th day, every 30th day they put him in Gehenna. So it's interesting. It shows that it's not necessarily all continuous, that you go to Gehenna for X amount of time and then you're home free. Rather, you could be 29 days a month in Gan Eden and one day in Gehenna. 29 days in Gan Eden, one day in Gehenna. I don't know why it should be that way. I guess if your life was, you know, 90% white and 10% black, right? White being good and black being bad, so then one out of every 10 days, you'll be in Gehenna until such time as that evil is eliminated, right? The same thing once every 30 days. You have this concept of Gehenna, which you have to go back to. If the Ritva didn't say it, I couldn't say it, but it says here, because you have it, it's in Akotin and Yaakov, those who have the photocopy. B'chol sof shloshim yom, he nidonim Gehenna. At the end of every 30 days, they are judged in Gehenna.
There's time in Gehenna?
Of course there's time in Gehenna, yeah. So everything which exists, even souls, exist in time, because the first creation, before anything else was created, the Rambam says, was time.
So the only person who could be beyond, God is the only
entity
beyond time. Mm-hmm. No soul will ever be able to experience what that is.
Right.
So even in Gan Eden, souls are in time.
Yeah.
So it's just an infinite time.
Yes, it's an infinite time.
But Gan Eden Gan Eden, that doesn't go away.
Well, it depends how long, you know, which cycle we're in, a whole bunch of Cheshbonos, we don't know exactly.
Right, but there is a certain Kabbalistic principle saying that Gan Eden even may be, you know, temporary, in a sense, when you look at the whole scale of all the creations and everything.
Right.
So, what about the idea that Gehenom is no more than a year, or even like a month or something between some?
That's if you're a good guy.
But those,
No. What?
It's not being Gehenom more than a year.
No, sure, it can be Gehenom loads and loads of years. Mar says Acher was in Gehenna for 200 some odd years. These guys are in Gehenna for over 1,000 years. It's, if you're not such a big Russia, then a year is enough. But if you really, really did something very terrible, nah, year's not enough. By the way, they speak about Lubavitcher's Kaddish in Gehenna. We spoke about that.
What?
You speak about that?
No.
There is a Kabbal, I know where this appears. There's a Kabbalistic notion that when Avel says Kaddish, he takes away 90 minutes of Gehenna from his dear departed relative. Don't ask me, I don't understand it. Sorry,
where does that come from?
I told you, I don't know where it comes from. So the so if you Lubavitchers, who are an Avelus, make sure to say every single day 16 Kaddishes. Because if you dive in before the Amud and you say all the Kaddish you're supposed to say as a mourner, you get 16. Chati Kaddish Kaddish Sholim, 16. 16, right. 16 times 90 minutes, 24 hours. So that's why they're very, very meticulous, Lubavitch, saying all the Kaddish. Because otherwise, says their relative's going to burn for those 90 minutes. So they want to make sure that that's
what
they
want.
They make too many onions.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah.
Well, they
only
have
10
people.
16 times,
they
don't
have people.
Then they
have
a
problem.
Yeah.
I know after Mara, they say extra.
Right, to make up 16.
Yeah, they say extra, like, she likes, and they
keep doing that. Right. It doesn't want to get up to 16
for days.
Yeah, that's totally opposite perspective, yeah. You know, I don't know, maybe you can sort of let them burn. I don't know. But,
what about, I mean, let's say Bilam, he says the Goyish of Gan Eden, or there is, or Korach Jewish, or there is the same, I'm sorry, Gehenom.
Yeah, no, everybody. Everybody has their custom made punishment. In other words, the Gemara says in Gittin that for that Bilam, he every day gets boiled in boiling. I think it's either excrement or semen. I forget which one. No, but what? Semen? Yeah. So, excrement is Jesus. So the
why?
So
name
it. What? Because he caused the Jews to sin with.
He himself did not cause the revival of Jesus.
What?
Not Jesus.
Oh, right.
He's not the guy and the revival of Jesus.
Yeah, but
the
thing is, anybody.
It wasn't Jesus.
He was. He's right. He wasn't.
Partly was.
He wasn't completely responsible, but he led people to believe that he was a special pipeline to God. He didn't make Christianity a special religion. But he did try to tell people the only way they could reach God is through him. That's not such a good thing.
Okay, but for the Goyim, it's a good thing. Instead of
but he didn't preach to the Goyim, he preached to the Jews. Paul's the one who started preaching to the Goyim.
The one that we
passed
for?
Actually,
yeah. Yeah,
but why Paul... Why
he started
this?
What's going on?
He used to be a
shiver
boy here. What's
clear?
Where
do you get the name Paul?
He said he had a vision.
No, I mean
he was high on something, I guess. I but and generally speaking,
he was trying to make it universal.
Yeah, I know what went through his mind.
So
I really don't know.
No, first he spoke out against the Christians, and then
he changed his Sunday.
No, he didn't change his Sunday.
I thought the rabbi was
Yeah.
I thought rabbi. I mean, rabbi Kleiz. There is many room on. But the Roman place is very, very, a lot of streets you find that this place, or this amount was in the next synagogue, and the rabbi was afraid that many Romans going to become Jews, and they
wasn't very good with it.
So that's why they started Christianity?
It sounds like they try to change Christianity to different ways. Well,
no, but the other way around. That, according to that medrash which he's quoting, I don't know if it's a valid medrash. But in that medrash he's quoting that Peter didn't want Jews to think Christianity was okay. So therefore he changed Christianity so it would not resemble Judaism anymore. Yeah.
So, can you be punished for the end result of your actions?
Of course!
So, if I make a joke that's off color and people take it the wrong way or something, then.
You better burn.
Interesting.
Yeah.
It's not just just tell you what you did, but also.
Oh, of
what
course!
Secondary actions.
Yeah, that's why, there's a final judgment day at the end of time. The judgment day after a person dies is not enough, because there's a ripple effect from what you did for all eternity. If you told an off-color joke and you caused Noah here to say, that's it, I'm not going to be Shomer Thermistis anymore, right? You have to turn me off,
right?
And then he goes and marries and has Rahman of Uzban, non-Orthodox kids, non-Islamic kids, and they have grandchildren and great-grandchildren. All of those Averas. Not all the Averas, but some part of that you're getting the credit for.
You're getting
yeah. What's the other way, too? You influence Noah to become more Shomer Thermistis, then you will also get rewarded for that.
You could say, but you don't even know. You could say a firm community or somebody kind of shuns off, let's say, before Kirov, like reformer non-religious Jews, and you could have gone to the Torah by shutting them off. You perpetuated, and you're all part of their reform movement. Not you, I mean we, are part of their reform movement.
Yeah, of course.
That's hard to say because the consequences are immeasurable and unforeseeable.
By you. God can measure them.
I know, but he punishes me.
What?
Will he get punished for that thing?
Yeah.
No, what did you say?
Well, so much for Kavana. Kavana
is not enough.
If you light a fire.
If you eat pig with great Kavana, it's Kimakan and Shem Shemai. Does that work? So, let's have that insufficient. Ian's so busy with the rest of the
room. I don't know about how to see this again. Look at this. What's going on here?
The emperor of Ethiopia gave a signed picture. Yeah, I was
Is that one, those two
Khalifa?
Gave autograph pictures. What?
He
said
the emperor of Khalifa.
I cannot
believe
it. Line of Gila.
Yeah.
I cannot believe it. He's
with the lie. Oh my God! He's a huge world leader here for some time.
They're very cute, Ian.
I cannot.
They're
more.
Okay.
Right now, Ian remains enthralled by the Rassman Rabbi.
Ian is tzaddik by... No, I mean, I'm not talking about tzaddik. Let's see. I don't know, not Tanya tzaddik. No, I don't know.
No, not Tanya tzaddik.
Regular, okay, let's say 50%, 49% bad, 51% good. By
definition,
he's
a good guy,
right?
Yeah, but he's called a tzaddik. But still, he's going to have to, according to most sources, they don't cancel out. You have to go through the cleansing process to have 49% before we follow the 51%.
So he's going to go to Gehenna. For over a year, or under a year, or...
As long as it takes. Might take 5 minutes. Yeah.
So, wait, if
a
person makes physical sins, he gets the physical punishment,
if he makes
the spiritual sin, he still gets the physical punishment?
Why not? It's all metaphor. When he tells that to Unkluz, he's saying, if you were try to understand my punishment in terms of this world, this is what's happening to me.
I see.
Yeah, I don't think they're big vats of excrement in Gehenna.
Right,
they're boiling people. Yeah.
And second question. If these people are like this much later, they're still the same people as when they came in. What good is Gehenna for them then?
It's a very slow process. Eventually, they realized intellectually and not just superficially, but deep down, that this emotion is very bad,
and they are able to rid themselves of that emotion. Okay, and then they're left with whatever positive thing they have.
The worse they are, then the longer
they're exactly.
Or the worse consequence.
Now, yeah, it says about Acher. Acher had a big problem. You guys know what Acher was?
Yeah.
Acher was Elisha ben Abuya. It was a town that went OTD. And he... he went to OCD and he became non-observant, even though he kept learning Torah and teaching Torah. So, you know, now they have a reformed kollel in New York City.
Really?
Yeah. The New York kollel.
What do they want? The Rose kollel woman?
I don't know. Could be. Why not? The, Yeah. So the,
It's very expensive, but it is very tough to get to it, or very.
Okay, so in any event, so after he died, it's the Gemara says, they didn't know what to do with him. They could have put him in Gan Eden, because he had been in Russia, but they couldn't put him in Gehenna either, because he had learned so much Torah. So he was kind of like suspended. Wasn't he couldn't go to Gehenna, because in Gehenna you feel, the point is to make you feel your life was worthless. Right, but his life was very meaningful. He learned a lot, right? So therefore, Rabbi Meir, his Talmud said that he when he dies, he's going to make sure that Acher gets into Gehenna. So at least stage one should start, right? So after he died, smoke started coming out of Acher's grave. I assume it's symbolic. And then sometime later, when Rabbi Yochanan died, a couple hundred years later. So then he said, that's enough. No more burning for Acher. When I die, he said, I'm going to bring him up out of Gehenna. And then he came out of Gehenna.
Choosing Gehenna for that long? Why? What did he do?
He was OTD. He started, he was Mechal Shabbos. He did all sorts of other nasty things.
Like
he
what?
Probably built Mechal Shabbos. He was probably created a great Chil Hashem, that somebody can learn that much Torah and still be OTD. That's a problem, right? Chil Hashem is the worst of error.
The physical Gehenna or not?
No. It's all metaphorical. Yeah.
But there is a physical Gan Eden.
There is, but that's not Gan Eden we speak about when we speak about souls going to Gan Eden.
Okay.
That's usually we speak about the spiritual Gan Eden,
okay.
Not about the physical.
What is wrong with the whole story where you heard?
Okay,
uh-huh,
right.
Yeah.
He was not supposed to listen to the Baskel. That was a test. Right.
Yeah. We speak of Gehenna.
No, any Baskel that a person hears comes from inside their neshama. Not any Baskel. Any voice which a person hears. As Mara says, they always hear voices from heaven. No?
What was that?
A voice came out, for example, said, Halach is like Hillel.
Oh, yeah.
So that those voices, some of them are from heaven, but a lot of them are your own neshama speaking to you, or heaven speaking to you through your own neshama.
So you start hearing voices,
see a good, competent mental health professional. But besides that, you shouldn't necessarily take them to be definitive. So Acher was not supposed to assume that this was true, that he should not do tshuva. This is a test. He might even brought it upon himself. It was his own psychological perspective.
Maybe there was a greater purpose for him not to go to there. But, you know, there is a greater, like, he went to, what is it called? He went to Ashman, right? Or he went to Patras, right?
Before, yeah.
Yeah, so maybe that was something that he was supposed to do. Maybe that was his destiny.
To go off to Dara.
Yeah.
We assume we have free will. So if you don't assume free will, you're right, then maybe that was his destiny. But if that was his destiny, he's destined to burn as well. So God says, you sin, you burn. It doesn't matter whether you sin because it's your destiny, whether you chose to do so.
But he's doing it as a mitzvah, though.
So it's also a mitzvah for him to burn. It's a Kiddush Hashem, right? If somebody's a tzaddik and he gets rewarded, that's a Kiddush Hashem. Good for him, right? Somebody's a Russian and he gets punished, that's a Kiddush Hashem. That's good for him. On the contrary, if you gave him a reward, be the worst thing in the world for him. Because then he never realized what was right and what was wrong.
So, if you gave honor to Russia,
if we didn't like him, we could keep going to him and just make it Gehenna work.
Usually, in this world, when you want to honor Rishonim, it's because we want their money. So that's generally the way it works. So in theory, though, yes, if we give honor to the Rishonim, then it would make their Gehenna worse, because they would be better off suffering in this world.
When you say Gehenna is a metaphor, you mean we speak of it metaphorically, but it's a real thing.
It's a real spiritual thing. The burning excrement is a metaphor. okay, it's worth coming, Josh.
There's not a perm spiel on that guy.
I just have to tell you something. First of all, he goes to Tehran, he's friends with all the Muslims, there are all these kids gathered around him, he's in Japan. Yeah, he really the seeds of greatness in this man. He you see the picture?
He's still
alive. Because he had a lot of power. Yeah.
He's a very rich fellow.
Many people are enthralled by him.
His lifestyle.
Picture.
Yeah,
they
all
made.
He went totally off the
deal.
No, not totally.
He's still alive?
Yeah, Elizabeth Nimrod.
I don't know if it's showing me about, but yeah, it's still one. As far as I know, I saw somewhere last year, recently, it was a few months ago that he spoke somewhere.
Wow.
Well, the last pic, the after pictures are quite cool. they're the before, during, and after pictures in the book. So they're different stages of his journey through life. Let's take him once we're on topic. Let's take him as an example. So this guy, it's a very strange thing, wrestling, right? Even if it's fake, assuming it's fake, but this guy, was he a Kiddush Hashem or a Chilul Hashem?
Mm.
Right? So it's a little bit of both. So he did tshuva, so all bets are off. But let's say, Rachman al-Islam, he didn't do tshuva, right? So he probably would get punished for all the Chilul Hashem which he caused, and rewarded for the Kiddush Hashem which he caused, because all those things are taken into account, and everything he did would be measured by what the ramifications were, which I'm sure are very complex. Yeah.
So wait, things don't offset one another?
No.
And so if you go with, okay. So if
tshuva is mechaper.
Mechaper?
Tshuva erases averos.
Okay, but if someone were to just go through life working, I don't know, like consistently, not doing much with their life, they're coming home watching TV, basically they would get no reward and no punishment, very little reward and little punishment. Someone who goes out and does a lot of, let's say, sets up a charitable foundation, but at the same time goes around and does a lot of other bad, does a bunch of bad things, then they get a lot of reward and a lot of punishment. Right?
Is there something wrong with that?
No, it makes sense. I'm just trying, things don't cancel one another out.
Right.
Theoretically, what happens to someone who doesn't do any good deeds or any bad deeds? Is there like a void?
He's a vegetable? What is he? Didn't do anything?
No, let's just say like there was just he did tshuva for everything, or he didn't do anything. Let's say theoretically, there's some neutral person.
Tshuva.
Is there like a void in the metaphysical realm, the spiritual realm that we're talking about? Like if someone could just
no, but there are levels of Gehenna.
Uh-huh.
And the levels of Gan Eden. In other words, there's no. I don't think there's any absolute neutral. But there is, although they say, it's hard to know about Hanukkah Shemayim. We don't know, but because it does say that there's a certain type of people who don't get into Gan Eden. So I don't know what the definition is. So Achim was obviously in limbo until Rabbi Meir got him into Gehenna.
Was that in the
40s? 40s and 50s, 60s and 70s.
He's wrestling in Europe in 1947.
That's
chronological.
You heard about the Chassid that he passed away on Shabbat? And they won't let him into Canadian, and Gehenna was closed, so he came back. That's what he said.
Okay. I told you about the Gra, right? The Berditchev said about the Gra. The Rebbe Yitzchak Berditchev, who was one of the main Hasidic rabbis, he said when the Gra died, so he was going to Gan Eden, but the Malachim didn't want to let him in because he was very sharp against the Chassidim. So all the sparring that the Gra wrote came and they ran interference for him.
so he could get into.
So he just broke even. Lucky him. Lucky draw. He broke even. I don't know.
So that's how, you know, that sounds like he could have been like out there from the Vidichavas perspective. Could have been up there suspended.
No, that's not what happened.
They ran into fear. They
that's scary. The limbo part's scary. It's better to almost be in Gehenna because you at least know your place and you know that there's a hope on the horizon.
Yeah, it's better to go to Gehenna because
to be in limbo.
Absolutely.
Who's the Kedushas lady?
But I think it's very rare. Yeah, in order to be in limbo, you have to really have a lot of merit to offset the shame of Gehenna. That's not a simple thing. Yeah, if you wasted your life, then I don't think that gets you into, limbo. Yeah.
If you sin and do tshuva, you're still punished in this world.
No, not necessarily. Depends for what avera. Not necessarily.
You hear what happened to Kedushas Levi? When he went up, they're like, why'd you say that about the Gra? And he was in trouble. And then this farm came and helped him. Can I get someone joke? This guy goes to Shemayim, Talmud. He goes up and he's there and he says, he's in, you know, he's like, do you have any requests? He's like, yes. He's like, I'd love to see my Rebbe. He's like, sure, right this way. And he walks into this palace. He walks inside, he's like, wow, it's Gan Eden. And he walks in and he sees his Rebbe there, from the Gemara, just shagging away. Oh, the fruits of paradise. And he looks and there's a swimming pool next to him. And there's this, an undersea woman, the tricks are just lying like this, dead bored. So he walks in and goes, hi, he goes, Rebbe. And he goes, oh, yes, it was so good to see you. He goes, yes. Blah, 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 blah. And he goes, Rebbe. He's like, I'll do respects. Are these really the fruits of paradise? He goes, Yassala, Yassala. So quick, the judge. He says, this is not my Gan Eden. It's her Gehenim.
There is a famous story. I don't think it's a Jewish story, but it's told over by Jews that in both Gehenna and Gan Eden there are tremendous banquets and feasts on the table. The thing is like this: everybody has a fork which is too long for them to get into their mouth. So the Rishonim just keep going like
and
that.
No elbows.
What?
And no elbows.
No elbows. Right? Okay. So the Rishonim just keep going like that. Trying to get in, can't get in, can't get it in. The tzaddikim, each one feeds the other one.
There was a Sesame Street with two Muppets, and exactly the same thing happened.
Is that a Jewish?
Who said that happened before? Come on!
What?
That's
dumb.
I like that.
It's
not
dumb.
You just eat it with your mouth.
That's not
true.
It's not so dumb.
Hold the fork in the middle, huh?
It's not so dumb because Rish Lakish says, and this is a fundamental principle and of Gehenna, but certainly it's true of the world to come, after this world is comes to its end, is that the same sun, which is the healing for the tzaddikim, is punishing for the rishonim. In other words, it's the same light.
Right.
The way the light affects you depends on how you're prepared to receive the light. So therefore, if you're a tzaddik, you're in sync with that truth. It's absolutely that influence. Yeah. So I think that's the idea of the mushroom. The banquet is the same. It's just a question of who's ready to get it, who's not ready to get it.
Who's the only one who's kind of cool? Is it the same as Nike?
Yeah. It's all the same guy. Well, at the beginning, it's
wrestling
the camera.
Wrestling in Europe and taking pictures, showing off his muscles in 1947.
Yeah.
2 years after
that. So that was big Kiddush Hashem, right?
I don't know.
Well,
but
no, I'm not being sarcastic.
Yeah.
I'm being serious about that. Yeah. Rav Chazanish was probably not too happy about that.
Yeah.
Okay, let's just stop here. If anybody wants to come to Shabbos, please let me know. Don't let me know now. This is an invitation.
Oh.